running an ask card. If you mention some names, we make them clear enough so she can pick them up.
Okay.
I'm speaking today with Professor Arthur Brandstatter, instructor of the School of Criminal Justice. He's already contributed a very excellent memoir to the Hanna Archives. Today we'll sort of fill in some of the details. Art, when did you come to Michigan State as a student?
I matriculated at Michigan State in the fall of 1933 as a student and planned to study in the college, what then was the School of Education.
In those days. What diverted you into what was then police administration?
Well, I guess it's a long story, but...
Go ahead.
I was in education, and in those days, you may recall, we were in a period of a recession, and money was scarce, and we lived literally from one day to the next. And it was necessary for me to work when I was in school, and I obtained a job with the Michigan State Police as a janitor, and I was cleaning the offices of the Detective Bureau and also living at the State Police as part of the reward for my work experience over there. And in that capacity as a janitor, I had the occasion to meet a number of the high-ranking police officials who were working late at night, and frequently I'd sit down and talk to them, and they would tell me some of the cases they were working on, and this kind of excited me, and I became very much interested in what they were doing. And during the discussions with them, I learned that Michigan State at that time was thinking of offering a program in the field of police administration. Well, within a few years they did. As a matter of fact, I think it was in 1935 that the program in police administration was initiated on campus as a five-year program. And when that program developed, why, I transferred from the education program into the police administration department in those days. And that's the reason, really, is my exposure to police work through the discussions that I had with the state police officials.
Was Tom King there?
No, Tom King was not a part of the program then. He was here on campus in the Dean of Students office, or coaching, I've forgotten which, but coaching first and then ultimately in the Dean of Students office. The fellow that was in charge of the program in those days was a man named Don Bremer. Don Bremer was...
How do you spell Bremer?
B-R-E-M-E-R. And he was responsible for the campus police operation in the 30s. And had obtained his law degree. No, not a law degree. He studied law under Judge Carr, C-A-R-R, and passed the bar exam. And therefore, when the program was initiated in police administration, Bremer was put in charge of it. And he taught all the law courses, and he was the first so-called director of the program.
Who taught the other courses then?
The other courses were taught primarily by state police officials. There were five or six courses numbered in the 300 and 400 level. The chief of detectives, for example, taught, and several of the officers in the hierarchy of the Michigan State Police taught, and also Dr. Lemoyne Snyder. And Dr. Snyder, as you know, whose father was a former president of Michigan State, was very active in the development of the police administration program at Michigan State. And Dr. Snyder taught a course called Homicide Investigation. And as a result of teaching that course, he subsequently wrote a book titled Homicide Investigation. And that book is generally recognized as the text, literally the Bible in the field of homicide investigation. Has been published several times now, printed, reprinted several times, and published in several different languages across the world.
Really?
So from that beginning, developed this very excellent text on homicide investigation.
Well, this is a slight digression, but had he had police experience before he got into this field of expertise?
No, Dr. Snyder never had police experience, but he was serving voluntarily as the medical legal consultant to the state police. Where and when he developed his interest in investigation of major crimes, I don't know. except that when we first met him, he was a medical legal consultant to the state police, and he conducted all of the physical examinations, medical examinations of recruits and state police troopers, which was done once a year. Of course, in those days, the entire complement of personnel was small enough to permit one person to do that over a period of time. But he also served as a consultant to the state police in major crimes, homicides, for example, and he would conduct the pathology of involved in investigation of cases where bullet wounds were part of the evidence, and he determined where the exit wounds occurred and where the entrance wounds occurred, and also the damage and the angle at which a bullet may have been fired into a person who was a victim of a crime, and other things that related primarily to homicide cases. And I assume that began as a result of his experience with the state police in this voluntary capacity, and they called upon him for his services, his medical services, really. And from that beginning developed his very keen and intelligent interest in the field of homicide investigation. I recall very vaguely that he had some exposure to a major case that occurred when he was an intern studying, I believe, on East Coast somewhere, as I think about this. And it seems to me it was the homicide involving a notorious underworld character known as Legs Diamond.
Oh, yes.
D-I-A-M-O-N-D, I think it is. You may recall that name. And somehow Dr. Snyder was exposed or received, had an opportunity to be a part of the investigation of that incident involving the death of Legs Diamond when he was an intern. And I have reason to believe, based on my recollection, that this resulted in his subsequent interest in the field of homicide investigation.
Isn't that all very interesting?
Yes, it is.
How people get into things that they never expected to, just as you did.
That's right, exactly.
Just as you did.
Yeah.
After you left Michigan State, Art, you went into police service, but not with the state police.
No, I preferred to join a metropolitan police organization, and I joined the Detroit Police Department.
And then came your military service.
Yes, I was with the Detroit Police Department for several years, and then having gone through the ROTC program here at Michigan State, I had earned a commission, and I was called to active duty prior to World War II, and went into service, I think it was February 1941. And during the time I was in the service, I wanted to do something other than police work, which I knew, and I did receive an assignment as a personnel officer of an air base squadron at Scott Field, Illinois. But subsequently, as so often happens, because of my background in police work, I was ultimately appointed the provost marshal of this large Air Force base as a first lieutenant, and then from that point on, I continued in some form of police service in the military as a company commander of military police company, and also as provost marshal, as prison officer. I had a large complement of prisoners that were being detained on our post, either temporarily or awaiting transfer to major penal institutions at that time. So I got exposed to prison work early in my career as a young officer. And I remained at Scott Field for several years before I was transferred then and went to the Pacific in capacity as a public safety officer in the occupation of Korea.
Which was a wonderful background.
Oh, yes, it was.
Which led you into many other things subsequently.
That's right. It was a great experience, especially in the service where one received responsibility very early in one's career, which usually doesn't happen so quickly in the civilian life.
Then when you when the war ended and you came home, what'd you do then?
Well, I was in Korea at the time war ended, and because I was in the specialist category, I could be kept on for another 6 months. I had enough points to get out. You may recall the point system entitled one to leave the service, but I was held for 6 more months. But I had a job opportunity, really, to come back here to East Lansing as the chief of police. And I might add that I understand later that President Hanna was instrumental in urging the East Lansing city officials to consider me for appointment as Commissioner Olander was in those days, that the two of them got their heads together and decided that they ought to try to get me out of the service and back here in East Lansing as the chief of police. And as events turned out, why, they were able to contact me, although they had difficulty at one time because you couldn't reach us through normal means, through wire transmission. You had to come through radio and through Tokyo at the time because communications were non-existent at that time between the rest of the world and Korea. And Tom King was given the responsibility, incidentally, of reaching me, and he finally did after he got in touch with my wife, who told him they couldn't reach me through telegram. They had to wire to Tokyo and ask General MacArthur's headquarters to send the message to me by a radio. And then I subsequently got the message and responded immediately because I wanted to come home very badly.
As I remember, in those days, the East Lansing Police Department had the responsibility for policing the campus. Is that right?
Yes, they did. The university collaborated with the city of East Lansing and paid at least half of the salary, as I recall, of the East Lansing Chief of Police in order to provide supervision and administrative responsibility for the campus police operation, and I had both responsibilities.
Then it was subsequently divided. So
it was, yes.
So that the university took up its own, had it established its own police,
yes,
public safety.
As the university began to grow, the president and the board of trustees decided that the university should have its own police operation, and President Hanna asked me to develop a plan and dividing to two departments, which I did and submitted to him, and he shared the plan with the city officials of East Lansing, and subsequently the division was made and the Michigan State University developed its own police operation, and I was in charge of that for about 14 years.
I well remember that you were in that job when I came to the
yes.
When I first came here. So you then, when did you take over the police administration program?
Well, I was with East Lansing for years, chief of police, and then the university offered me the responsibility and job as an associate professor in the Department of Police Administration, working under the direction and supervision of Tom King, who, within a few months after I joined the university, which was in September 1946, I believe, my King was elevated to a new responsibility in the Dean of Students office as Counselor of Men, as I recall the title. And then I was virtually given the responsibility of administering and supervising the police administration school, as well as teaching two courses, and also subsequently becoming chief of police on this campus. So I was a pretty busy young man in those days. And within a year or two after I joined the faculty, I was subsequently made head of the Department of Police Administration and continued to teach two courses. And then we began to add staff as the program grew, and until it reached the proportions it has today, with well over 1,000 students and a faculty of 25 people.
And it's now called the School of Criminal Justice.
It is now called the School of Criminal Justice as a result of substantial changes in the program, where our orientation is to the criminal justice system rather than to a component part.
That's why I want to ask you, this yeah. leads you into what I want to ask you next, was how has the emphasis changed as the program has developed?
Well, initially, this police administration program was designed to prepare young people for law enforcement work as police officers primarily. The emphasis has now changed from one in which we are concerned with more than one component part of the system. We're concerned with the entire system, and we use a systems approach in teaching our students about the criminal justice system. Therefore, we expose them to information about the three major component parts of the system: the corrections program, penal institutions, parole and probation's work, the law enforcement community, the various types of police services we have in the country at the federal, state, and local levels, how they operate and interface with each other, and of course the the court system. And we talk about these and the need for them to become a viable integrated system. And this is the principal change in emphasis, where we're no longer addressing ourselves through courses and through curricula to a law enforcement program, but to the entire system as a integrated system.
And there's a demand for these people in all.
There's a great demand, areas. And increasingly so in this day and age when teachers and others in the social science professions are not able to obtain jobs. Our young men and women are in great demand, and incidentally, most of them enter the field. Very few of them fail to find opportunities in the field for which they've been prepared. And the Placement Bureau keeps us informed on the placement of our students, and we're surprised and pleased that so many of them do enter the criminal justice system.
Certainly, this was one of the first universities to get into this whole area of criminal justice on the broad scale, like this.
Yes, a number of schools were interested in this field back in the 30s and the 20s. For instance, the University of Chicago, University of Southern California, the University of California, Los Angeles, University of Wisconsin, San Jose State College were some of the pioneers in the field, but not in the same sense that Michigan State developed its interest. Actually, Michigan State University is the first major institution that addressed the field as a degree program. Most of the others were concerned with institute-type activity, short course training, an occasional course or two in a political science or sociology department. But Michigan State initiated its program from the beginning as a degree-granting program in the field, and this is the one thing that distinguishes the Michigan State program from all of the other programs, and continues to do so. Matter of fact, we have added since then a master's degree program, and now have the doctorate program in social science with an option in criminal justice, which is another innovative idea, new to the field, because it is a multidisciplinary approach to doctoral study in the social sciences with a major interest in criminal justice. By that I mean a student must take one-third of his work in criminal justice, but may elect to take two-thirds in one or two other related disciplines, such as sociology, political science, or psychology. And it's a very fine program. We have graduated a small number of students from the doctor program, quite a number, of course, from the master's program. And again, it represents the kind of leadership that we have taken in the School of Criminal Justice in meeting the needs of our field.
Well, to tie this back just a little bit, Art, now into the Hanna regime here, you always had the encouragement of President Hanna in this program.
Yes, as a matter of fact, without President Hanna's support and insight and understanding of the need for highly trained young men and women for the law enforcement community and now for criminal justice, frankly, we would not have prospered as we have over the years. He gave us unyielding support through the years, even though a program as new as ours was questioned on occasion by faculty, particularly the more liberal elements of the university community, who wondered whether or not people should be prepared at the university level for this public service. But President Hanna always felt the need and supported the need for highly trained, educated young people who would provide the leadership in the years ahead in law enforcement, in corrections, and the court systems, recognizing that although many of the people enter at the operational level, sooner or later, if they have the potential, and most of them do, they'll advance to positions of responsibility and influence and bring about change in the system consistent with the changing society.
Can you want to talk a little bit about what you've done with particular agencies of government? Particularly, I know you had a close relationship with the Treasury Department, the Treasury Department, and the work of the Secret Service over the years. Do you want to comment a little on this?
Yes, among our many responsibilities in the area of serving other institutions in our society in a public service capacity, one of the things I did early in my career here was to help the U.S. Treasury Department upgrade its entire training program for all of its law enforcement agencies. they had fairly traditional programs and settings that were not conducive to good learning. And over a period of about 5 or 6 years, by working with them 2 or 3 weeks at a time, we were able to change all of that into a very modern, contemporary type of training endeavor, which is today is recognized as one of the best academy type programs for federal law enforcement agencies in the nation. And that was a very interesting experiment and worked out very well. And as a result, I was really offered of me a top job, a very attractive position with the Treasury Department, but finally turned it down and remained here at Michigan State.
Guess who talked you out of it?
Yeah, guess who? The very persuasive Dr. Hanna.
I'm sure of that.
President Hanna really is one of the most persuasive people I've ever known, and I stayed at Michigan State primarily because of this, his ability to convince me that my future's here, and I'm convinced now that he was absolutely right, and I'm delighted that he caused me to stay at Michigan State.
All right, is there a trend in the United States now towards insisting on better training for police officers?
Yes, there is. This has developed particularly in the last 5 years. I have sat on a number of national commissions and boards that have addressed this question and considered the need for a better educational preparation for men who enter the service, the police service. And this has occurred really since the President's Crime Commission report of 1967 and 68, when suddenly people throughout the nation, city officials, municipal officials, federal officials, state officials, began to recognize the very complex responsibility of the contemporary police officer in dealing with the social problems that he must deal with effectively if we're going to have a viable, effective, meaningful police service. And when one polices human behavior, there's no more complex responsibility that one can really try to serve. And it requires the intelligent judgment of a man who's well prepared and trained to perform this service to make the kind of decisions that are usually done, especially in crisis situations under highly sensitive emotional conditions. And one's training and background and preparation for the role comes into play on these occasions. And not only that, it's recognized too that generally the hierarchy, the leaders in the field are obtained from the operational levels of police service. And because of the way the system operates in America, there's no lateral entry. Therefore, the men who become captains and chiefs of police and inspectors are drawn from the ranks, and therefore they have to be prepared to perform the responsibilities they assume at that level, because they're no longer police officers. They're now managing human resources and material resources, and they must know something about budgets and organization and administration and leadership. And this is the reason that more and more people who are being appointed to positions of responsibility are college-trained people.
Art, I happen to know, for reasons you understand, that you've had a lot of foreign visitors here, foreign police officers, to study your methods and study with you. Would you like to comment a little on how far-reaching this has been?
Yes, because of our interest, my interest and one or two other members of the faculty and the School of Criminal Justice in relating to foreign programs, we have encouraged a number of foreign officials to study with us or visit us for the purpose of giving a lecture or seminar to our students. And we've had people from parts of the Far East, Formosa, Japan, Indonesia, Thailand, and in recent years a number of people from Europe. We've had people from the Scandinavian countries, Holland, Norway in particular, and the British have visited us on several occasions. We've had some brilliant criminologists come from Austria and do some research and study with us. And we've felt that this gives our students exposure to different concepts of criminal justice that one doesn't receive here in America, and it points up the need to consider alternative ways of performing police and court services in the nation that other democratic countries are as successful, in some cases more successful than we are, in dealing with the issue of crime in our society. We felt so strongly about this that we have now developed a program with, in collaboration with the University of London and with Scotland Yard in England, so that we've been offering a comparative course in criminal justice in London for the last 3 or 4 years. We offered in alternate years. The first time we offered it was in 1970, in the summer of 70, and we'll be offering the program again this coming summer, 1972. Ralph Turner, who's a member of our faculty, will be administering that program. It's an 8-week offering. We limit the number of enrollees to 25 students, and the faculty is comprised of the Scotland Yard training faculty. Some of the training academies provide personnel. We also obtain faculty from the University of London and from the London School of Economics, faculty, in other words, who have some contribution to make to the program. And it's been very successful, and we're delighted that the British police have agreed with us that this kind of relationship between two countries and with differing philosophies of criminal justice have engaged in an educational effort of this kind.
Do you think they learn anything from us in this?
Yes,
project?
They do. They learn considerably from us in terms of relating, trying to relate at least more effectively to our heterogeneous society. They're beginning to have the same kinds of problems that we are having and have had for some years with the so-called minority groups in our society. And they're learning from us on how to handle this kind of very complex, delicate situation.
Well, I'm glad we have something to contribute.
Yes, we do.
A little variance from this, Art. I notice by the papers that there's some controversy about these movements to coordinate the police services, particularly in our country, to relate the possibly state, municipal, and county services, mm-hmm. sort of metro squads, so-called. Is this a growing tendency in our country?
Yes, there's an attempt to develop functional services on a regional basis, such as the metro squad you talk about and these other squads that deal with the question of illicit traffic and narcotic drugs. I don't think this is the answer, however, to America's needs to develop a better police service. I think what has to be done is to develop on a regional basis an organizational structure that will amalgamate literally the police departments that are now so fragmented it's difficult to deal with them effectively, and there are jurisdictional problems and disputes of all kinds that arise that rarely come to the attention of the public, for example. And if we're going to develop a career service in the American Police Service, some kind of reorganization will have to take place, preferably, in my judgment, on the regional level, and an optimal size police department to establish something like 500, 600, 700 personnel and not have any department smaller than that throughout the nation. That means that counties will have to join together in developing a regional police service, and the metropolitan areas, Lansing, Detroit, and others, will have to restructure their entire police organization so that they're being served by one unit, which would also permit us to develop career opportunities for young people who seek careers in the police service. It's very difficult, for example, for able young men to join a police department that's 10, 15, or 20 men in size. There's no great opportunity in departments of that size. The tendency for them is to employ people who don't have the potential or the ability, intellectually or otherwise, to serve, provide the quality of services that are needed in our kind of society. So I'm convinced that we are moving in the direction of some kind of restructuring of the entire police service, and I suspect this will be at a regional level rather than the state level.
One last aside, police are not overly popular in the certain elements of our society these days. Does this handicap you in recruiting people for potential service in police departments?
No, it doesn't handicap us at all. For some reason, the present conditions that exist are not conducive to, generally speaking, attracting the kind of people from from the community at large to the police service, but it appears that because of the great interest among young people to serve their fellow man, to be less concerned today about material rewards, more and more able young people have been attracted to the police service and to serving the criminal justice system in our society.
Interesting observation.
For example, we've had very few young people, young women particularly, in our program. Over the years, we've had somewhere between 25 and 50. But today, because of the great interest in young women, and perhaps in women's lib, too, liberation, there's an expanding role for women in police service. And as a result, we have over 250 young women in our program today, and we expect to have over 300 next fall. And this, I think, manifests the interest of young women in becoming, providing greater services to law enforcement.
Not all in police service, of course. Some will be in probation
service. Some will be in probation and parole services and court settings and the so-called service that's called the friend of the court, you know. There are a number of opportunities and an increasingly expanding role in the penal institutions in our society for women. And this is a hopeful sign. And furthermore, young women are now being hired to perform general police services in municipal and state police departments. You may have read just a few days ago, the new FBI director has now opened up the FBI program to young women. This has never been the case before. So there is an expanding need for women, and they can perform a very real service.
Well, Art, this has all been very interesting. I appreciate your coming in, taking the time to do this, and I wanted to get this on record because I know your long association with and admiration for President Hanna. I know how much he thought of you and how proud he is of what you were able to accomplish with our School of Criminal Justice. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Good boy, Art.
That's good.